afternoon, Thursday football fans, and welcome to the Soccer Central podcast. This September the 29th, James Sharman here with you. A big day, a historic day for the podcast today. Number one, the most important thing, the best part of it is there's no John Molinaro in studio. I jest there somewhat, John, a little bit. There's no Thomas Dobby, there's no Brendan Dunlop. And to make matters even better, we've got a couple of brand new rookies, so to speak, in studio. Virgins, as it were. Podcast virgins. And we're going to pop their cherries today. We have Craig Forrest to my left. Craig, welcome in studio finally. It's been a few times on the phone on this podcast with you, but not actually in studio.
No, it's great to be here. Great to be part of it. And also great to have our producer that normally is talking in our ear when the show's on is Dan Fernandez. So great to have him on board here too. This is awesome.
Dan Fernandez. Hey, usually he's a guy talking to Craig and myself on the Premier League broadcasts every Saturday and Sunday. Now you're behind the mic itself, so to speak.
Well, thanks for having me aboard. At first, I was initially very excited to do this, but clearly no one else was available. So that's the only reason I'm here. But seriously, it's great to be here. Let's get into the discussion.
I have to apologize if we sound a bit out of breath, but
yes,
it's a good reason for it, though. It's nuts here, right? So it's a bit of rain. So everyone stays in the Rogers campus, which means every elevator is packed. So we, as athletes, decide, let's take the stairwell. Three flights of stairs. And we're naked.
Unacceptable.
It really is. If they knew this before time, there's no way they would have agreed to do this show today. Dan, by the way, should mention, I first met Dan. What year was that, Dan?
Oh, it would have been, 2003?
Yeah, 2003, back at the Score. Pre-footy show, Sports World.
Sports
Dan
World.
Was
right.
My right-hand man who we didn't pay. We paid him nothing, not a cent.
And I was happy to do it.
And then one day Dan comes in and goes, James, so listen, I've got a job at Sportsnet, and they want to pay me. And I said, you bastard! Yeah.
It actually didn't quite work out that way. It was Omni Television.
Oh, it was Omni, was it? Sorry, it was Omni. Okay.
Yeah, when they still did production out of there. And then eventually I made the lateral move over to Sportsnet. But it's been a whirlwind the last few years. So
Dan's been producing Premier League here on Sportsnet since 2005, 6?
Yes, 2006. The 2006 World Cup's when I started. And then got into producing maybe 2008.
Right, World Cups, Champions League, Europa Leagues,
UEFA
Cups.
A lot of live events, Toronto FC games as well. But it's been a blast.
World Cup qualifier. Yeah.
And they pay me. It's great.
Dan's the brains behind.
More of a hobby.
Dan's the brains behind Craig and myself.
I don't know about
absolutely.
That.
Absolutely. I'll go along with that.
What a crap week it's been for English soccer, boys?
A little bit.
My God. Well,
something happened?
You didn't get the memo? Oh, the email? Sam Allardyce, I sat behind this very mic and on various shows about, 6 weeks ago, 2 months ago, talking about Sam Allardyce as the England manager, and I thought it's a pretty good thing, not a bad idea, and we'll give him a chance. He coached one match and they won it at death. Big goal by Adam Lallana. And here we are now, 67 days after his hire, and he's no longer England coach after some enormous controversy this past week. You know the story, I'm sure. If not, check out any website, including sportsnet.ca, because I won't explain it all now. But he's out amidst perhaps corruption allegations. Essentially, he was caught on camera, amongst other things, talking about how to get around some of the FA rules, his employer, regarding third-party ownership. Any sympathy for Big Sam here?
Yes, a little bit. I mean, it's not a great situation, obviously. I was a fan of his. I thought, like you, I was somewhat excited about it. I mean, the English system, certainly in the coaching and what we've seen over the last even decade, it's laughable, really. They are the laughing stock of the international game, and they just can't seem to get it right. And then they finally get a man, English guy, that they think they can give it some positive spin and moving forward, and then he, a couple of errors of judgment here, no question about that. It's an error of judgment by Sam Allardyce, and finds himself out on the ear from the job that he always dreamt about getting, which he held on to for some 67 days total and 100% record, though. Nobody's ever going to beat that.
That's right. That's
it's not
right.
Bad, is it?
No.
But, I mean, I don't know. I saw this story break earlier this week, and I saw the coverage by The Telegraph. And I thought to myself, yeah, it's really embarrassing. It's stupid. It's naive. But I didn't think it was really fireable. And I kind of got the impression that had the FA come out and held a big press conference with Sam, where he apologized profusely, publicly, and the FA said, yeah, we won't condone this behavior. It's not, you know, becoming of an England manager. We've warned Sam. And moving forward, we hope we can, you know, avoid these kind of situations again. I think had that been done, there wouldn't be too many people complaining, saying, okay, yeah, it's embarrassing. Let's move on. Do you think, though, he had to be fired, Dan?
I think so. I think so. Given the fact he's, you know, the English national team manager, obviously he's getting paid quite handsomely to do that role and to have him on the record trying to take a little more money for doing something unethical. We can say the only problem is it's just the tip of the iceberg, apparently. And people associated with football know this kind of stuff goes on. And Sam, unfortunately, is paying for it with his job.
Is he the scapegoat?
I think so.
You might be right, James, too. That when it came down to having the meetings with the FA when he was called in after this, they might have said something along those lines. And would that work? I'm sure they were massaging things, but they probably asked him, is there potentially more information that the Telegraph aren't releasing? And he probably can't answer that truthfully, and he doesn't know. And that would be really, really embarrassing if it got worse. And we know what the media is like. And it's not... The Telegraph isn't one of the newspapers you would expect this to come out of. The Sun newspaper, the Mirror, maybe. But anyway, it's a difficult situation for everybody, yeah. And you have to sort of feel for Sam. But poor error, really.
For sure. And it's really it's not the first time he's been associated with this type of thing as well, right? Well, not in this in particular, but sure. A few years back he was caught up in the Bung scandal, which
wasn't charged though. Yeah,
exactly.
But he was caught up in it.
Right. Right.
And but let's be honest: if the Telegraph hadn't have broken this story, the FA is well aware of the culture.
Somebody should have protected
behind
it.
The scenes. They know what's going on. And they've decided to do nothing about it. Only now, it's now exposed, are they saying, yeah, we can't condone this and we will have investigations and try and, you know, uncorrupt the corrupt world of football.
Yeah, there's so much money involved and we're going to see this. We historically have seen this happen year on, year out, different countries, different bodies, right up to the very top of FIFA. So it goes on. I was over there for 18 years. I certainly saw it happen. Several occasions we knew it was going on. But I got to say that these days with the regulations, it doesn't happen as much, I don't believe. They have to be certainly clever about what they're doing to try to create some opportunities for agents and potential managers for bringing in people. But there's offers there consistently from agents all around the world and from these different people putting pressures on the managers to take some money for offering up players. It happens and it will continue to happen. They got to try to regulate as much as they possibly can. But with the money involved, we'll continue to see this at some level. I still think it's cleaner than it used to be.
I mean, when they mentioned that in that meeting with Big Sam, he said, listen, you cannot be discussing this with me in the room. This used to happen, not anymore. So he said that. He said, this is wrong. He said that. That's kind of been lost amongst the shuffle here. Yeah. He also said that, you know, no matter what we agree on here regarding the monetary payout to me, I must pass this by the FA first. So, you know, that's why I have a little bit of sympathy for him, because he wasn't incriminating himself too much. He talked about how do you contravene perhaps the third-party ownership. Didn't say you're going to break the rules, but how do you circumvent the rules? But you're right. It's
and for 400,000, yeah, would have given you the answer.
Yeah. And people say, like you said, Dan, you know, £3 million a year. Yeah. Why does he need this? But you always need more, right? It doesn't matter how much money you make. You always want more.
Well,
he just got caught with his hand in the cookie jar this time.
You speak to a
lot of ex-footballers and coaches, off the record, of course, and they'll tell you this stuff's very much par for the course. And until I think they clean up third-party ownership and make all of that stuff transparent, I don't know if this is going to go away.
Get himself even involved in this. If he's got his dream job, and then to get involved in this, he's making $3 million for another $400,000.
And it's before his first game as well.
Yeah.
You know, he had accomplished nothing at this point, and he's already trying to monetize it. So optically, it looks really bad. I think he's been let go mainly from the embarrassment he's caused rather than actually what he did.
Yes.
You know, he's not taking bungs per se, as far as we know. Mm-hmm. Maybe, but like you said, great point is that maybe there is more out there that might be divulged, which would have put them in a very precarious situation.
He was supposed to save England from relegation, right?
Yeah.
We're usually talking about saving somebody from relegation, whether it's West Ham or Sunderland.
Do you blame the media, though? I mean, it's funny how you mention, you know, this is a broadsheet, the Telegraph. It's not a tabloid. And this has been a 10-month investigation into corruption. So I'm fine with that part of things. But when they're releasing the information and the quotes by Sam regarding Roy Hodgson, Woy, as he called him, about Wembley, about, you know, other areas that are far more tabloid-like. It shows that the media, you know, I think has something to answer for. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, I don't consider it really entrapment per se, because they're going after what they perceive to be, you know, in the better interests of the general public to be divulged.
Yeah. And I think the media and newspapers have certainly changed over the years. They're struggling for readers. They have to keep driving people to their newspapers to read and buy newspapers. And I think the Telegraph has got themselves mixed up in this too. And like you said, rightly or wrongly, it's the way it is. And this is another reason why it surprises me with Sam Allardyce and a lot of these managers and coaches and former players that get mixed up in this, because they know they're after, they're looking for any little angle. And you should smell a rat most of the time when it seems too good to be true, it probably is.
Yeah, you're right. We need more clickbait on TV, Dan. Yeah,
that's right.
You know, we want more viewers. You know, we should just come out with some ridiculous comment off the top of the show just to get more people in.
That's right. Let's do something on Danny this weekend.
Yeah, we do sometimes, actually. Well, since Jerry left, we do. Because I'm an idiot.
Right.
I will say this part, though. What the FA's done now, they're the president now. You better be squeaky clean when you get this job. And I give them credit for having, I guess, principles. Now, admittedly, I think, you know, they could have done this a long time ago. They knew there was issues there. But the next guy that comes in, if it's Gareth Southgate, Arsene Wenger, Eddie Howe, they know now it's been set. You cannot, you know, go behind our backs in a room full of complete strangers and try and, you know, negotiate money for perhaps information that isn't appropriate. Given that much, you know, you can't do it now. Simple as that. The line's been drawn.
And at the same time, you would think that they would know that in the first place. I don't think it was any different for Bobby Robson, other than the social media and the cameras everywhere. But you just have to be smart in what you're doing. You get these positions. But
I think Sam just got caught.
He just got caught.
Simple as that?
I think it's as simple as that.
They've all done it?
I think.
I can't prove it.
A lot of them at some level, whether or not they're receiving straight up cash or whether they're receiving some sort of benefits or perks because of working with certain agents, that happens all the time.
It's not just Sam here. And unfortunately, like you said, he's the scapegoat for all of this. And I think it's just the tip of the iceberg, that there's going to be some other names that are going to come out that we're going to raise our eyebrows and say.
But you wonder, I mean, don't people smell a rat? I mean, my God, you're in this room in this deal that seems better than it possibly can be, like you said there, Craig. You got your financial guy beside you. You got your agent beside you. Three guys, three intelligent human beings. And they've been duped by a couple of journalists. It's incredible, isn't it? Mm-hmm. I mean, it does not look good at all. You've got to, at some point, you know, use your spidey senses here and go, man, and if I'm going to do this, let's get some results under my belt first.
Yeah, and who are these people around him that he's supposed to be trusting?
Trusting, right?
And putting him in the right direction. If he actually thought this was something to do for £400,000 without actually doing something illegal, he probably thought it was pretty easy. But like you say, you got to smell a rat. There's something that's not quite right.
Yeah, optically it looks terrible. But if Big Sam was at the helm of Sunderland when this happened,
right?
Are we even talking about it? Does the sting even happen?
Does he get a charge by now by the FA?
I think it was an easy target.
Yeah, target.
I think Sam was an easy target. So people in circles knew.
The Telegraph knew. They got, okay, Sam isn't on the up and up here. Mm-hmm. In which case, it's his own fault. Yeah, could well be right.
They got more information. We know that's coming out. I mean, was it right? The assistant at Barnsley has been fired by taking
Jimmy Floyd Hasselbaink.
5,000 pennies to hit Floyd Hasselbaink.
Well, how about when the FBI went after CONCACAF? I know it's a totally separate issue, but people in the circles knew that kind of stuff was going on. You just couldn't prove it. And then sure enough,
and that's
it
the
all
thing,
came
though,
out.
You know, the English, right this day, right this moment, England is the laughingstock of world soccer. But there's a lot of nations out there who are just keeping their laughter very quiet behind some hands here, because they are as corrupt, if not more corrupt. You're telling me it doesn't happen in the Serie A or in La Liga or in the Portuguese Super?
We know it has.
Yeah,
has,
for sure.
And is, as we speak, is happening. Yeah. And they're probably quite nervous now as well. If FIFA decides to crack down on this stuff, which is laughable, but if they do, I mean, there's going to be a lot of nervous people out there, I think.
Yeah.
And if you're sitting right now in England and you've got a bit of a history, some skeletons in the closet, and you know the Telegraph are dropping these little clickbaits every 24 hours, man, you are nervous at the moment, aren't you?
You're in some dodgy hotel somewhere at any time.
Maybe that's why England's waiting to 4 games to name a replacement, because they're going to see who else is going to be caught up in this. Because could you imagine they sign Manager X as the new England manager and he gets nailed?
The Telegraph are just waiting. In the
waiting,
hoping that they hire the right guy for them.
That's why Southgate's, I think, pretty safe.
Yeah.
Yeah, seems very quick, clean. He's squeaky clean. He's been a company man for a long time now. Yeah. Four games he's been given, right? Four games. Tell me this. He says, according to the Times, just before we came up today, the Times reporting that he's kind of changing his whole opinion. He would take the job full time now. Let's say in four games time, and they're playing Malta next week, right? They've got an easy schedule.
That's in the bag.
They've already played the toughest game.
Yeah, yeah, they have.
Yeah. Thanks, Sam. Slovenia will be.
Thanks, Sam. He wins four games and wins them well. And he wants the job. It's going to be hard, isn't it, for the FA to say, okay, we're going in a different direction, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. I think that if he does do that, I mean, good for him to take the opportunity. Opportunities don't come around very often. And if he does, good for him as well. But like I said, they've had the hardest game away. It's not a particularly tough group, and I would expect that they would do well against the rest of them anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
But so I don't see them, I don't see them doing poorly with him at the helm. So if that's the case, then he will have every opportunity to take the reins.
There was a speculation that, you know, one of the reasons why he wasn't really considered before was because the players wanted some of the more experience. Should you be asking the players' opinions on hiring the England national manager at all, especially given how young that team is?
I don't know, yeah, Dan. I mean, you look at what's going on there over the years, and they've had, you know, they've gone English, then they've gone foreign, then they really went big with Capello, spent a ton of money on him. That didn't work out. And Roy Hodgson. The list goes on and on and on. It just seems to be, the bigger picture seems to be more of a development of good English talent that is the problem, and not so much the managers, because right, it doesn't seem to be who it is. They seem to fail at the big time hurdles.
I agree. Qualifying, with the exception of maybe 2008 under McLaren when they didn't get to the Euros, has been a walk in the park for England. It's when they get to the big tournament and trying to motivate this group of players, this talented group of players, to play well against Iceland, to play well against Costa Rica. Games they should be winning, they're not winning, and I don't know what the answer is. But
I find that certainly playing in the Premier League and that fast-paced hustle, bustle, end-to-end, lots of excitement is great to watch. Television internationally doesn't work the same way, and I think that these English players are brought up on that type of style of football, which is exciting, but when it comes to winning tournaments, you have to be able to be disciplined and have an unbelievable knowledge about defending, and they haven't really been able to do that. So you're asking a group of players to play one way and then change the system and style to in a tournament that you only have a manager for a few days before it gets ready. Other hand, you look at an Italian national team who I think Serie A would suit international football better than the Premier League would. And I think that's a factor too. So you ask a lot from players that aren't used to playing in that particular type of style of play.
Right. That explains it. I mean, listen, Italian players are under the same kind of pressure as English players, yet they perform at big tournaments and on a regular basis. The pressure's there. The media is tough in Italy as well. Now, they might not hit you as personally as the English media, but the pressure's there. And certainly the mental fragility is a big part of England's issues, you know, in many, many years. Arsene Wenger's, I'm not sure he's a favourite right now, but he's, all the press is talking about Wenger as being a potential replacement for Allardyce long term. And even this week, Wenger said in the media, listen, you know, I would be honoured to take that job, but listen, I'm here till the end of this season. That's all I'm looking at. But in the past, he hasn't said that. He's kind of saying, well, maybe beyond this season, I might be open to it. Mm. The big question this week on the show, and you'll see on sportsnet.ca next few hours, is would Arsene Wenger be a good choice as England manager? It's amazing how, if we asked this question a month ago when they were struggling, no chance, terrible idea, he's awful, he should be fired now, he should be done, retire. And now Arsenal's playing great. They've won a few games back-to-back, Champions League, Premier League. It's like, oh, that'd be pretty cool, Wenger as manager. What do you think, Woody?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one because it's obviously a results-based business, right? If he takes over for a year and England qualify for the major tournament and then they tank after three games, he won't have been a success, and that's ultimately what he'll be judged on. I don't think there's anything wrong with Gareth Southgate, personally. Give him a string of games. See what happens. Obviously, if they don't fare so well, they'll have to bring in somebody on a permanent basis. But you look at a guy like Southgate, who's been there and played, knows the English system very well, having coached at the junior level. I don't see any harm in giving him four games and then taking it from there. England, as you mentioned, they've gone the foreign route with Eriksen and Capello. didn't work out so well. I mean, Ericsson was okay, actually.
He got out really well in English.
Yeah, that's right.
That's Roy right. was doing it's, okay until Iceland hit.
Yeah, exactly.
Really? Yeah, it's, 10
it's,
straight,
it's
right?
It's a fine line. Yeah. And the same thing, I think, will happen with Wenger. You bring him in, they'll qualifying would be a breeze. But then you get to the major tournament, first game's a draw.
Well, you, being Portuguese background, you obviously enjoy watching Portugal win that tournament. It wasn't the most exciting, but it was, you know, you
could
argue that they had a better team in 2004.
I'll take it. And
yeah, exactly. But the manager wasn't the first choice, or certainly not the most popular choice.
Exactly. Critiqued throughout the tournament until they won it, that they were boring. They were playing the un-Portuguese way, if you will, whatever that means.
Ronaldo.
Exactly. Exactly. But you know what? At the end of the tournament, they won. And that's all I think people are going to remember.
Will he be in Boston Bronze one day? Will he somewhere? Will they make a
probably,
statue
Probably,
of him?
Right next to Eusebio.
A little ways away.
Yeah. But
after a couple of World Cups in there first.
That's right. But it's again with Wenger, it'll be such a results based move that ultimately is going to, I think, define his tenure. I mean, if he even comes in,
there's less pressure for Wenger, right? If it's Southgate, you know, he comes in, okay, just show us some progress, right? If it's Wenger, suddenly the fan base expects a win, don't they? Because of his name. I mean, it hasn't won for a while with Arsenal, but still, you bring Arsene Wenger in, suddenly the expectations are far greater, aren't they, than if you bring in Southgate.
I don't know. I think their expectations are always great with a national team. They expect a lot for the most part. I think Wenger's age, if he ends his tenure at day in, day out working with Arsenal Football Club, he might suit the international game as far as at his age, and he doesn't have to work in day in, day out. He can still do it, I'm sure. But again, I think I'm with Dan. I was just giving the Southgate an opportunity because he does know that system and show it up an improvement. But again, it will be inevitably the results. And they get to the World Cups and the Euros, and if they can get to the quarterfinals and even semifinals and show a progress that they're doing well, then that will be sufficient, I think, to keep your job. If you don't and you go out to an Iceland again next time, it's the same old story. It's just another 4 years on. So qualifying is one thing, but it's the big show everybody wants to see.
And managing national teams in general is a whole different beast. Like Wenger's used to working with his players on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. He's going to get 3 days for qualifiers.
In fairness, he got to deal with Jack Wilshere once every 6 months.
Yes.
At Arsenal. It'd be the same thing with England, right? So it'd be kind of similar with those players, you know?
Yeah. Until he gets injured in the first training session.
Injuries. It's certainly fascinating. I don't know. I wonder if Big Sam avoids dealing with the Wayne Rooney situation and the new guy that comes in has to deal with that straight away. If Rooney's benched today, they're playing some team I've never heard of in the Europa League. If he's benched for that and he's benched on Sunday against Stoke, can you really pick him for Malta? I mean, it's Malta for crying out loud, right? Even 20% Rooney should play well in there. But it's interesting. Is it easier for Southgate to drop Rooney given that he's coming through the youth system?
Yeah. I'll be wondering because, I mean, Sam Allardyce comes in. He was talking about, we thought he was going to make some real wholesale changes, but it was his first match. And it was the toughest match of the group on paper. So he didn't make that many changes. He kept it the same, which is probably smart. Know what you're dealing with. So now Southgate comes in. Does he do the same thing? It's against Malta. We got to make sure we get the result.
And he's got less than a week to figure it out.
Well, who have they got second? It's Malta. That's a cakewalk. But then is it Slovenia away?
Maybe Slovenia second.
Yeah. I seem to have Slovenia on the brain. I don't have it in front of me.
It is because we showed the game on Tuesday.
Yeah, and that's no easy task.
No, it's tough. It's tougher.
And then, so Southgate, let's say England don't get a result in that game. He'll be criticized either for calling in players that were too young or for calling in guys who aren't in form, like Rooney.
Yeah. Who would want this job?
Yeah.
It's not easy. Yeah. It's
just
win,
baby.
$3 million, it's not that bad.
Well, I guess so. You're right. Right? Well, that's a good point, right? Is it the worst job in football or the best job in football? It's one of the two, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It couldn't be any more
different.
You know,
some of these guys get fired before the end of their career, or contracts run out, and then pick up other jobs. They end up making more money than they would if they stay there. Yeah.
Mourinho.
Did he get paid from Chelsea to walk? And then
Capello as well, right?
See, Capello. Yeah. That was millions and millions.
Yeah,
it's this money's been.
It's not a bad gig, and they say a lot of guys leave that job with a smile on their face too, because it's, you know, the pressure is so immense.
Yeah,
you know, you fail, sure, but it's so difficult. And when you do finish with that job, you realize how your life's been just changed, and you're in this fishbowl.
And they must it must tear them apart because as a coach of the national system, national team, you don't get the players. I mean, you love to be working with them and say, you know, I got 2-3 weeks to be able to work with these teams. And even a lesser team, England's not exactly a lesser team, but a lesser team, they say for South Korea, for instance, 2002. They went on a year road trip, 2 years, I believe, prior to, they played in the Gold Cup in 2000. They were a traveling road show, went to every possible game, every all around the world playing internationals, closed their league down to make this average group of players play like a team.
It helped that the tournament was fixed. No, I'm joking. Yeah. Well, there were some awful
you
calls.
You mean the Gold Cup,
right? Yeah, that's right.
The coin toss.
The coin toss against Korea, right? Yes. Yeah. Were you present for that?
I was, and they wanted to do it by themselves, funny enough, CONCACAF and Holger Oceak. I'll just give everybody a short story about how that happened. We were tied in every way. Costa Rica, South Korea, and Canada, three-team group. Everybody was tied, goals for, goals against, head-to-head, everything. So they had to draw lots, and against South Korea, they wanted to do it by themselves, and they clearly didn't want Canada in there, and we knew CONCACAF didn't want us in there. We don't bring fans, we don't bring TV contracts, we don't bring anything. And so Holger demanded that he would be right beside them when they did it. And
I still remember Holger celebrating. It was literally a straw or something, wasn't it? He had in his hand, I guess.
Yeah, well, that was the second one because they actually threw straws in Miami, and then they flipped a coin in Los Angeles for that particular one. Yeah.
That's unbelievable, isn't it?
Yeah. I had a great grand game of golf sorted out for the next day, too. So if we lost the coin toss, had this great round of golf sorted out. So it was a winner either way.
You can say that now because you won the tournament.
Yeah, we're like, oh, great. We got Mexico that next. Oh, brilliant. But that turned out okay.
It worked out.
Can you imagine? There is no way. Had that been behind closed doors, there is no way Canada would have won.
No. There wouldn't be no coin toss at all. I think they would have just come back. You lost. You're out.
Yeah. See ya.
Yeah. Well, even though we were part of CONCACAF and South Korea wasn't. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
No, my God. Quickly regarding Allardyce, so he says he wants to get back into football. He will. How soon do you think he'll return to football? There's going to be availabilities at some pretty decent clubs. Maybe his old clubs, West Ham, Sunderland.
Sunderland looks a good fix. You look at him coming into Sunderland around February time, something like that, to try to save them.
You can see
again.
It, can't you?
You really can see it, yeah. And they're going to be in trouble. I mean, there's a lot of clubs that are going to be in trouble, and they might be looking for a Sam Allardyce to try to keep them up.
Still a good coach, right?
He is a good coach. And I know he plays a system and style that people don't generally like, but I think he can be flexible. And I think we would have seen this with England, that depending on the players that he has available to him, I think he could be flexible. But we'll never know, because I think his next job will be similar to the last ones he's had in teams that are trying to stay in the Premier League, which he's been hugely successful doing.
I agree. I think he's best suited for that avoiding relegation role. I was a bit surprised when he was named England manager to begin with. I thought, well, he's got no national team experience. He's never really won anything. I mean, there's no trophy for avoiding relegation. No. But it started off okay with the one win, but who knows now?
Do you think it's hard for the FA here, the next guy, they can't go to Steve Bruce, who was reportedly runner-up to Sam, because even if he deserves a job, and it makes sense why he might get the job, it'd be considered the second choice. Whereas Southgate said no to the job to begin with, they can always say, well, he was our first choice. He said no. Arsene Wenger said no. They could always say, well, you know, we wanted him, but he said no before. You know, I feel bad for Steve Bruce. He is the silent victim amongst all this. Yeah. He's still looking for work.
Yeah, exactly. That's Paul. I mean, that's another situation altogether. He was there for quite a while and actually did very well. Yeah. Promoted with them, then relegated with them, but shoestring budget, did amazingly last year to get them promoted. And the owners want to sell and don't want to spend any money, and you kind of understand that. So they've left them in a really difficult position, and obviously Phelan's taking that right now. But
Manager of the month. But now they've lost two in a row and everyone's forgotten.
Yeah, and now they got Chelsea next. So it's not getting any easier for Hull.
Yeah. Apparently gave him a low ball offer, Mike Phelan, for a contract at Hull. So he's turned it down.
It's a tough old business. It's a tough old business. My God.
Why are we talking about Hull? All right, because they're on our network.
You're never on this. Very good club. Live in sports. Yes. 9:30 Eastern on Saturday, right? It's Hull Chelsea.
That's right.
Yeah, right. Chelsea's not playing too well these days. I want to get quickly to some Champs League stuff briefly. Celtic 3, Man City 3. What a match that was. So Pep's 100% record overall comes to an end.
They're human.
Hey, Craig, did you ever play at Parkhead?
No.
You didn't, eh?
I never did, no.
What a fantastic stadium. Yeah. You know it is, and the pressure, how that does in many ways add that 12th man to the field, as much as it was a cliche, right? Yeah. But my God, give Celtic credit. They beat Barcelona there a couple of years ago now.
Yeah. Barca at their best.
Now it's an amazing situation in Scotland, is that when you have a league that the Scottish Premier League that is almost laughable outside of a few teams, even one team, and Rangers are now back in there, which is great for it long term. But then you have this one or two clubs, Rangers and Celtic, that have an atmosphere and a following that is second to none around the world. It is incredible. And Brendan Rodgers said, he goes, that the noise of that game was something he never heard before. And I believe it.
It's a guy that was at Anfield for some European games.
Exactly. So it shows you what it's all about and what a club it is. And unfortunately, they play in the Scottish Premier League.
Yeah.
I mean, if they were in the English Premier League, that would be a terrific sight. But obviously, I don't think that will ever see that happen.
Although there's more talk about that being discussed, at least amongst Celtic and Rangers.
Exactly.
I'm not sure the English leagues would want it.
Rogers said that down in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
It's hard enough to get there with all the English teams. They don't want to have any other outside influences or powers that are going to make it more difficult for them.
You know what? Say they went to England, right? And it wouldn't be the Premier League to start with. They'd start in League One or the Championship. They'd still sell out Parkhead and Ibrox, wouldn't they?
Yes.
They'd still do it, even playing lower league, given the passionate fan base. Rogers said this week that he thinks that if Celtic played in the Premier League, there'd be top six or top seven.
Oh, that's a little...
It's no chance, right?
After six games.
Well, maybe after a couple of years with the TV money to be able to change it.
But
at this moment, they haven't got the finances to even come close to that.
Moussa Dembele are good, but they're not in the league. Right? The other Moussa Dembele is pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
Although he was great yesterday.
He was good.
So 3-3 and Pep drops points, but that is going to happen at some point. We know that. I want to mention Napoli-Benfica just because Dan's a diehard Benfica fan here.
What Napoli-Benfica game?
What happened there, Dan?
That could have easily been 6-0. It was closer to 6-0, in my opinion, than it was to 4-2. It was just Benfica had a bad 10-15 minutes, and they paid for it. And at this level, you can't make the types of mistakes they were making, at least in my opinion. They gave away a free kick on the edge of the box to Mertens, and it snowballed from there.
Let me ask you this. Would you like to see the top Portuguese teams, Benfica, Sporting, Porto, playing in a European Super League with the best from, say, France, Holland, Scotland? Perhaps not the top, the Super League with the Juventus, the Chelsea's, that one echelon low. Would you like to see that, or do you just like the Portuguese football the way it is?
I like it the way it is, and the only thing that scares me about a Super League is I don't think they would do so well. The reason why Portuguese teams, and I'm probably going to offend some people by saying this, is that sometimes they get the luck of the draw where you get a team from Poland or Belgium that you can easily beat. If you're playing Manchester United, Barcelona, Real Madrid week in, week out, I don't think they've got much of a chance. Whereas the Champions League, the way it's structured with the seedings and the coefficients, it's...
A Super League would change that.
I think so.
Right, obviously, because obviously you'd be looking at...
You'd get the best of the best.
The best of the best. The TV contract was massive. And I think this is what UEFA are doing with the new structure of this Champions League, is making sure they keep all of the rich teams really, really happy. Mm-hmm. Previous tournaments going way back are going to help you. Like, for instance, Liverpool get back in the Champions League, it's going to help them because of what they've done previously. So they're trying to make sure that the money stays, or at least gives those opportunities to those big clubs. That's what it's structured to do. They're scared, UEFA, of these clubs breaking away and having a Super League. And I'd be scared of it too. And I don't think, generally speaking, for the game of football, it would be good.
No.
It would be amazing for a while.
And the rich would get richer.
The rich would just get richer. And then the league football structure, right down to every single country in Europe, would struggle. It's been hard enough for those lower division teams as it is now. Super League would end some of them.
I agree. I mean, the concept of seeing, Man City against Barcelona week in and week out, it sounds nice on paper, but after a while, I like to see the small... I want to see a fairy tale every now and again, a surprise. There wouldn't be a shock in those leagues, would there?
No.
There'd never be a shock.
No.
Oh, wow. Chelsea just lost to Juventus. Ho-hum.
Yeah.
Right?
I mean, the Champions League these days, even when it comes down to the quarterfinals, it's the usual suspects. The group stages, you see a
generally
couple.
Speaking,
generally speaking, I mean...
You have the odd year where the year Porto won it in 2004, where the big guns kind of got knocked out
at
Monaco.
We're seeing it less and less.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. Those opportunities, those fairy tale stories are becoming few and far between.
Although maybe Leicester could be this year's Champions League fairy tale story. They're playing pretty well in Europe, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And I'm watching them, and what a great moment it is for those Leicester fans. Because quite honestly, this might be... Well, I don't think they'll ever see it again. They're not going to win the Champions League. They're not going to end up in the top four anytime soon again in the Premier League. This might be it. Their one and only shot at the Champions League.
Absolutely. I thought they were a bit fortunate in that second half against Porto. I thought Porto started to come on and they hit the post. And I don't know if it was tired legs because they had United the game before, but I thought they were a little fortunate to come away with a 1-0 win. But great first half. Mm-hmm. Great first half by Leicester.
Do you get the feeling that they kind of need this too, to keep that narrative alive in England? Because I'm watching Leicester week in and week out in the Premier League and they're not playing great. Mm-hmm. They're dropping points.
They've got the group for it.
Yeah, they do in the Champions League, right?
Yeah.
Because I think even when we're preparing for the weekend here, it's like the Leicester story, we're still remembering last year, but as far as watching it this year, it's like, well, they're kind of what we thought they would be.
Yeah. 7 points.
Really yeah, it's kind of what we thought they would be last year.
Yeah.
Because the year before that, they never got relegated, right? We're just like, well, how is this going to happen?
It's a tough one to put your finger on because if you look at their squad changeover, yeah, they've lost Conte and they've brought in Slimani, who looks like a good buy, but is it because Leicester were that good or maybe everyone else wasn't so good?
I think it's a combination. They were good last year.
Yes, they were.
But there's
they
no
still
doubt
are good. But
the big boys had a real off year last year. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. And they're all better this year than they were last year, the big boys.
And they only had league football to worry about as well. It wasn't Saturday, Wednesday, Saturday, Wednesday.
Yeah, now true. I think they got out of the domestic cups pretty early. Yeah. And
it's early still, though, boys. What is early? What do you consider early, Dan? When does it become not early?
Good question.
In English or in football in general?
I don't think it's early when you're sitting like Man City with 18 points after
after
six games.
They're doing nicely at this point, right? Oh, well, when you played, did your coach ever say, don't worry, boys, it's early still?
No, but what they would actually say is that it is early, so it's important to get off to a good start. Because when it comes January, February, March, and a lot of the teams I was playing for, smaller squads, injuries can play a part. Mentally, physically draining, taxing, and you can start to slip. So it's important for clubs with smaller squads, and if you're especially ones that just get into the Premier League, you want to get off to a bumper start to let it carry you to the end of the season. Actually, we saw that with Palace a little bit last year, and they're doing well again this year at the start, but they dropped and dropped and dropped. I think one point we were talking about them, they got chances to get into Europe.
A bit like Arsenal.
Arsenal finished second again.
I think it's about 10 games when you can drawing conclusions. I just find that in England, maybe in the UK in general, they just jump to conclusions every week. The narrative changes from week to week, and it's like, well, let's just let it breathe, guys. It's only six games in.
You produce a Premier League show every
week. I know,
week.
It's crazy.
We gotta find stories, right?
One week, Chelsea's the best, and Conte's the best player on the field, and next week, they've lost to Arsenal, and everyone's ripping their defense.
It is true. Crisis at Man United, loses City, fine.
And now it's Chelsea this week, right?
Yeah.
And now it's Chelsea's turn.
And they've lost two in a row, and who have they lost to? Liverpool and Arsenal.
That learn you as far as players go that it can change really quickly. Yeah. And you would tell you enjoy your week a lot more if you get a result. Because if you don't, it's not just the Saturday and the Saturday night and the press from that day and on Sunday. It continues until your next game.
It does.
Because you are as good as your last game.
On the street?
On the street. Fans, my goodness, going to grocery stores. Honestly, you just don't go out. You really don't. You sort of pick your moments, but you did publicly, you don't go out. And it's just not worth it.
Mind you, when you were at West Ham, you weren't living in the East End, were you?
No, I wasn't.
There was no Twitter back then.
Actually, that's one thing, because I, when I was there for 5 years, I lived outside. I was closer to Ipswich still. It was quite a drive in. And I thought to myself, I lived 13 years at Ipswich, and I shouldn't have lived in Ipswich. I should have lived a half an hour, 45 minutes, an hour even outside of it to get away from that. But I never really knew, because I was 16 when I went. I stayed right in Ipswich,
home, right?
And it was home, and sort of just sort of what you're used to. But they can be vicious, but they're also the ones that pay the wages and show up to football games and have their right to voice their opinion. And at the end of the day, it is pretty exciting.
Yeah, when you were, confronted, say, outside the stadium or on the street, negatively, sure it happened, especially at West Ham, how would you deal with that? Just walk away? Would you smile? What was your tactic?
Just walk away. I've been in pubs before, or even nightclubs when birthday parties or something like that, pushing yourself to go out when you shouldn't have, and bouncers basically saying, okay, you got 10 minutes, we'll give you a head start, we'll hold them back in here, so get in your car and go home.
Really?
Because they want to tear you to shreds.
Really?
Because you're out and you lost. The only reason why I was there was because it was a friend's birthday, so I was like trying to
But the fans think, how dare you be enjoying yourself and
you
life
shouldn't
when
be.
You lost.
Yeah, and I paid your wages and I went to your game and you were terrible and you should be ashamed of yourself, and on it goes. Yeah, there's the pressure is beyond anything in North America that anybody could. I mean, the Toronto Leafs, Maple Leafs have been terrible for decades upon decades, yet I've seen the players out in Toronto and people asking for autographs.
Love them, yeah.
It's like,
yeah.
They love them. And it's like, okay, well, that's great to be
Why
a,
is that?
Great to be a hockey
What is it
player.
About the English sports fan that's just edgier? I don't like it. It's not positive.
No, it's
compared
not.
To over here. You know, people complain about, I hear people criticize North American sporting experience. You know, it's far more family oriented. I think it's healthy.
Yeah. I think
Perhaps
it is.
The way it should be.
I think culturally, it's they have a real hate on, and yeah, if
it's
you're making
system,
if you're
right?
making me class system, sure, sure, a little bit, and if you're they're supporting you and you're winning and you're making them feel good about themselves, they like you, and if they don't feel good about themselves, they'll let you know.
Yeah.
It's they also keep people grounded there somewhat. I found that you can't get too ahead of yourself or too big headed because they will put you back in your place, and they drop people very quickly. They build them up, drop them, and that's sort of the English way.
Games tend to mean a lot more in those leagues as well, right? With promotion, relegation, you don't have any of that here.
Great point.
Leafs are playing the Habs in game 27 of 82 and they lose. Well,
yeah, so you actually get a better draft pick.
Yeah, that's right. They reward
it's a great
you.
Great point, yeah. There's so much more to it. You know, you lost this weekend, and that might resign us having to go to freaking Scunthorpe next season.
It's just surprised me sometimes with the owners from all around the world that get involved in the Premier League. And it's like, well, if you get relegated, your club is worth fractions of what it is in the Premier League. So you're risking so much. Randy Lerner at Aston Villa, he's trying to get rid of that. Did he get rid of it?
I think he did now.
Did he?
Yeah, they sold finally.
For a song, probably. Like, not nearly what they should have got
and
for
the
Aston
new owner's
Villa
very questionable as well. You really hope Villa can find a way to get back, because that is not a team you want to see. We saw Leeds do it. We've seen Blackburn. We've seen some big clubs just essentially go bankrupt.
Charlton,
yeah. You hope Villa is a team that can avoid that.
My old club, Ipswich, went into administration after having a really good year in the Premier League. They signed players, finished fifth, signed players on long-term contracts, figure this is going to keep us in the Premier League at least minimum, and they get relegated the following year.
Now, all of a sudden,
you got these long-term contracts that you can't pay. Going to administration, da-da-da. I mean, it's just not good. It really isn't good.
Still, it's the best system, isn't it?
Oh, I think it is. Yeah.
Can you imagine MLS?
It's not so much.
Great.
Yeah, MLS. Yeah, good luck with that.
That one was never going to happen because these clubs and owners have bought their clubs on the understanding that there isn't relegation promotion. You're guaranteed a certain income
each year. It's sort of interesting.
Just call it something else.
MLS, they're a league, but then they turn into an FA Cup at the end of the year. And that cup system at the end is the only thing that matters.
Right.
I mean, you get a CONCACAF Champions League spot, I believe, for the top league.
That's true.
Nobody cares.
No. Supporter Shield isn't quite what it perhaps is.
And it should be.
Maybe it should be, yeah.
Such a long regular season.
Mm-hmm. All right, boys. Well, this weekend on Sportsnet, all begins on Saturday, 9:30 Eastern, Hull against Chelsea. We also have West Ham against Middlesbrough. And then on Sunday, we're back up at 9 a.m. Eastern, Spurs, Man City. That could be the battle to watch all year long. I've got a suspicion it could be City and Spurs all year long. You know, United will be contending, Arsenal playing well. Sure. That Spurs team have joined their best start of the season ever, despite not playing that great thus far. So watch out for that. And Burnley against Arsenal at 11 a.m. Eastern. Myself, Craig Forrest, Danny Dicchio, produced by Dan Fernandez this weekend. Boys, thank you. That was fun.
It's over.
It's been 45 minutes, man.
Wow, we haven't even talked about Burnley.
I know. Well, listen, that'll be the second podcast, a special Burnley edition.
That's right.
No, thanks, boys. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
We'll do it again sometime. Yeah,
absolutely.
We are always looking for people to come in here.
Next time nobody else is available, you can call me up.
There's always space for you, boys. All right, thank you. Hope you enjoyed that, everyone. Check out sportsnet.ca for all your footy information and, of course, the big question. Log on, vote, and also leave some comments, and we'll get to the best ones and maybe the worst ones this weekend. Right, Dan? It's your choice.
I had my mic on, yes.
Yes.
It is your choice.
Yes, it is. All right, thanks. Brent Gunning behind the glass. As always, cheers for listening, everyone.